Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Thursday, October 31st, also known as Halloween. And we welcome everybody to the show. No costumes for me. I'm no Halloween participator. I don't know why, but I don't. I usually don't like costumes because I feel I'm too old for those. So who knows? But I never really liked costumes. I guess when I was younger, I did. But wishing happy Halloween to all the kids and all the adults that like to put on their costumes and everything. Although I think it's kind of ridiculous, but okay, what do I know, right? I'm a party pooper sometimes. I have a very special guest in the studio this morning, a filmmaker. We've had several filmmakers over the past few days, but that's because we work with a great publicist named Catherine. And she always sends us short filmmakers. Who often end up in the Academy Awards. So, Mr. Omar Ben-Shaker, welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining me. Are you prepared for the Academy Awards?
I am. We actually, my movie, Tree Number 3, was already a Student Academy Award winner.
Really?
So I had half of that experience.
Right. Is that given by the Academy here in Hollywood, the same?
Yeah,
the same
by Academy. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So they'll take another look, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about your movie, of course, and everything. And so this movie was done when you were a student?
Yeah, Tree Number 3 was done at the AFI Conservatory, the American Film Institute, where I studied directing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But you're originally from Israel.
Yes.
Which I am too. And
yes.
We've had, surprisingly, several Israelis over the past few weeks.
Wow.
And it's not by design, but I love it, you know.
Yeah.
So there you go, you know.
Yeah.
Always part of the tribe and... always a pleasure having people from the same place.
Totally.
So you're from Israel. Do you live here now?
Yes.
Oh, you do. So you immigrated here,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
How old were you when you did?
Well, I moved back and forth. You know, when I was a kid, my family moved to Texas, actually.
Oh, wow. How old were you then?
I was 9.
9?
Yeah.
So that was quite a move, right?
That was a very big culture shock, you know, because Israel and Texas are so different, I'm sure you know, too. So that was a big culture shock. And that's actually what the movie is based on. Tree Number 3 is that transition.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it's based on your life, based on your experience.
Yes. Basically, when I was 9, you know, I was really into musical theater and I wanted to be this big actor. And I had, you know, done all these plays in Israel. But then when I moved to Texas, because I had such a strong accent, Israeli accent, I couldn't get any role in the school play.
Yeah.
So that's really where Tree Number 3 came from, is this kid. That's why it's called Tree Number 3, because it's about a kid who's cast as Tree Number 3 in the background because of his Israeli accent.
Okay.
Yeah, and another part that was real, you know, so I didn't want to let these background roles define me, you know, in the school plays. And every time my grandmother would visit, she's actually an Israeli poet and author. Maybe you know her, Nurit Zarchi,
oh,
her name is?
I don't know, because I left very early.
Very early, yeah.
Yeah, in 1976 I left, so I don't know when she became big, but go ahead, okay.
Yeah, so... what was I saying? Oh, that every time she came to visit, mm-hmm. you know, she had really big artistic expectations for me. And I didn't want to let her down, so I didn't tell her that I got cast in the background roles.
Yeah.
And instead, I put up, you know, my own plays in our living room, and mm-hmm. I cast myself as the lead of the show.
Yeah.
And in all the parts. And the accent didn't get in the way. And, you know, my sister did a lot of the minor characters around me.
I see.
And, yeah, and they had to sit through an hour and a half, I think, of a show.
Your family did.
Oh my God, yeah.
I know, I used to do that too. That's funny, you know, but I didn't like actually make complete shows, but I would do impressions and comedy and things like that to my friends and to the family and stuff. So I can relate, and the family did have to sit through that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you said you have a sister. Do you have any other siblings or just a sister, right? Is she younger than you?
Yeah, she's younger.
I see. And so what about your parents? Did they have any theatrical background at all? Are they were they in entertainment?
My mom is a writer and newspaper writer. Her mom is Nurit, and her dad is Yoram Terlev, if you know Yoram Terlev. He is also a songwriter, you know, in Israel. He did Arzeinu Aktantonet and all those, you know, kind of iconic old Israeli songs.
Wow.
So she's in that side, and my dad is like a doctor and in a whole other.
Yeah, so the medicine didn't appeal to you that much.
Not at all. Complete opposite.
So a family of writers, actually, right?
Yeah, I mean, you
poet writers.
And, poet writers, yeah.
Yeah, very, very cool. So you grew up with that, and you grew up, you said, in Tel Aviv, right? That's where you grew up.
Yeah.
What part in Tel Aviv? Like northern Tel Aviv? Like
yeah, near Sokolov, near like the beach.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's pretty cool there, right?
It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I lived in a nice part of town too, and I always like to tell the story that my dad was born in a poor side of Tel Aviv. Well, he was born in Greece, but he grew up in an old part of Tel Aviv that was very very poor, and eventually. He ended up on the upscale part of town. So it's a short distance to go geographically, but it was a long way for him to come from poverty to be in upper middle class, you know.
For sure.
So a lot is possible there, and a lot was happening, you know, before Israel even became a nation in 1948.
Definitely.
So you came here early on at nine. And then you said you went back and forth?
Yeah, and then we moved back there. I did my service there.
Why did you guys move to Texas?
For my father's work.
Oh, so he was a doctor,
right?
Yeah. And what kind of work made him move to Texas?
He did like genetics research, but I'm not too sure exactly.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I was a little boy, but it was.
I know, but didn't you ever?
It was in the genetics field. He was researching some sort of syndrome that.
Wow, very
He's
cool.
An expert.
Is he still a doctor?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I just had a guest yesterday from Poland, and he said that both his parents were in medicine. So he went to medical school, medicine school, and but then he realized he wanted to make movies, you know, so that never happened, but... So sometimes I guess it rubs off on you when your parents do that, but sometimes...
That's so funny. Somebody also talked to me yesterday that went from medicine to film, and I was like, how does that happen?
Yeah.
For me, I was always... I mean, I think the fact that my dad was a doctor made me more of a hypochondriac, you know? I'm always scared of blood and everything. But I think, you know, for me, filmmaking was... I don't know. Like, it was from a very early... age, I just knew I wanted to make art. It wasn't always filmmaking. It was a lot of times, like I said, theater or writing, but it was never like a switch in my mind. You know, it was just sticking to the same thing and making
it better.
You just
knew that's what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
And even though did you know it was going to be pretty difficult and a very competitive field? Or at that age, you were just pretty innocent, right? You just wanted to... Make theater and make movies.
It's interesting. Like, I feel people, people always tell you it's going to be hard. But I kind of ignore it, you know? I'm kind of like, okay,
good
fine.
For you. And that's why you made it this far.
Totally.
Yeah. You see, with me, it was like I wanted to get into music, but everybody's always get a real job, and I got real jobs.
Totally.
So I never really pursued that. But good for you, you know?
Yeah. I mean, making films is crazy. Like, it's just crazy, you know? You have to kind of believe that you're doing something almost impossible, and that's the only way. It's not gonna oh yeah it's easy, you can do this path, you know. It's always gonna be like, okay, you just have to believe, like you have to have faith in the process,
right?
You know?
So now the move was difficult, and I know because I left at 16 and came here. I came on my own without my family, but they kind of sent me here, and I stayed with relatives for a while, because obviously at 16 you don't live alone. But it is pretty difficult, right? When they take you away from your friends and everything. At that age, you really want to fit in and feel like you belong. And then you come here and you feel that you don't belong because you have an accent and people right away ask you where you're from and you don't feel like you fit in.
Culture is different, for sure.
I know. For me, it was like, I mean, to this day, I'm still self-conscious of my accent. But back then at 16, I mean, to me, it was so, it got in the way because I didn't want to fit in. I was in high school.
Exactly.
I was in 11th grade. And so you just want to fit in. But as you grow older, you realize that's what makes you unique.
Exactly.
In a way. And people sometimes ask me, well, why do you want to sound like everybody else? You know, you have your own style and your own accent. And just stay with it and own it.
Exactly. I mean, what you're saying right now is the theme of Tree Number 3.
Really?
Yeah. Just what his journey is, you know, the kid in the movie. His name is Itai in the movie. He starts off so ashamed of who he is, right? Like, he is ashamed of his accent. He's ashamed of his culture, his background.
Right. He doesn't, because it's so different, right? I mean, so different.
It's
from
so
America.
Different. And since you really want to fit in, like you say, you kind of, the first thing you give up is on yourself, is on your identity, you know? Yeah. Especially at 9, if your goal is to fit in, you'll be like, okay, fine. I don't need that. I'll put it away. And he's a performer, too. He's an actor. He sees himself as an actor. So he says, okay, you know, in one of the first scenes when he auditions for the school play, he tells the teacher, you know, I can put on an American accent. I can be American. And then throughout the process, you know, the ending, he's proud of who he is. And he ends up being on stage for who he is and for his accent and for his difference. Yeah. And the interesting thing is, it's not just the theme of Tree Number 3. It's the theme of all the movies I've ever done.
Really?
You know, subconsciously, it's always about this journey of accepting your difference, accepting who you are, you know. And I always say just what you say. Like,
yeah, well, it's a big deal, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So obviously it stayed with you and affected you in a way that you need to express it in film.
Yeah.
And I know, especially when you're younger, I would imagine that you feel you don't even know your identity yet at that age.
Exactly.
At 9.
Exactly. I'm fascinated by that too, like building your identity. You know, when does it happen and how much does the surrounding affect it and how much do you create it yourself? And, but you know, the best thing about, you know, this subconscious theme that keeps coming is everybody can relate to it, not just immigrants, but everybody has that journey of not liking everything that makes them different, of wanting to push that away.
Right.
And then of realizing, wait a second, like, this is what makes me
unique. Right, right. And I mean, I remember that when I was a kid still in Israel and I wanted to be like other people.
Yeah.
Like other kids, you know? Like you said, it's hard to accept yourself sometimes.
Yeah.
And you want to be like everybody else. I know for a fact, I remember that very well. I used to lie about what my dad did for a living, even though, you see, because we lived in an area, in an upscale area, where most fathers were engineers, doctors, lawyers, you know, more like, and my dad was a manual laborer. You know, he had his own business, but, you know, he worked in sheet metal and things like that. And I felt embarrassed to tell kids what, you know, tell my friends what my dad really did. So I would make up lies all the time.
Right, right.
Because I refused to accept who I was. Although, when you think about it, he's made such a big leap from where he was to where we ended up that I should have been proud of that. But as a kid, you don't realize that.
Right.
You know, you just, again, want to fit in. You want to be like everybody else.
Right. Did he ever find out that you were not?
No, I don't think so, no. No, this was just between me and me, really.
Right.
Me and myself, you know.
Right.
And that was, I guess it's a terrible thing to do, but I felt ashamed.
Right.
You know, to be different.
Right.
So I see what you mean. So it's not just about being an immigrant. It's a childhood experience, probably, that everybody goes through.
Totally.
So they can relate to it in many ways.
Totally.
It's not always the accent that makes you different.
It's anything, and everybody has something that makes them different, but not everybody likes it.
Right.
But I think adults, too. That's why, you know, when we screen the movie, so many people connect to it, not just the kids.
Right.
But everybody, you know, so many cultures and, you know, people who don't like parts of themselves, you know?
So then you went back to Israel, and then you came back again, right?
Yes.
For the same reason that you came before?
Then I came on my own to AFI.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah. So at what age did you come back?
21.
21. So you went to the army and everything.
Yeah.
You did your service. And
yeah.
You see, I never did because I came here at 16 and never went back. By the time I was ready to do it, they're like, you're too old.
Oh,
we have
really?
Nothing to do with you, you know?
That's funny.
Yeah. But so you grew up as a bona fide Israeli.
Yeah.
And what? How were your teens in Israel? Did you also feel you tried to fit in different ways?
Of course. I think when I moved back there, it was the opposite, you know? Like the culture in Texas is so different that when you move back to Israel, then you're trying to fit in the other way. And, you know, again, you feel different. You feel like an alien in the world, kind of, you know.
How old were you when you went back?
I think 14.
14. So you were here about 5 years, then you went back.
Yeah.
And then for another about 7 years, and then you returned.
Yeah.
So at 14, I can see how, again. But what were the problems? How did you try to fit in back then? Because I know that... as a kid, we loved people from America, you know. Kids would come, they'd have these great toys and games and everything.
That was true for the first, 2 months. People were like, wow, how is America? And then once they realized I'm such a weirdo, I know nothing about Israel or anything about, you know,
I see.
The culture there. It's very different. But also, you know, really, I say this and it sounds cliched, but really what saved me in both times was making art, you know.
Wow.
Was making art.
Yeah.
Because when I moved back to Israel, you know, I was, like I said, I really didn't fit in, but there was a film department, and every time I made a movie, and the first movie I made was when I went back there, one of the first ones, I felt like I belonged. I felt like I have something to say, and that's where I felt like my difference is worth it, you know.
Yeah.
In filmmaking, in making art, you kind of take that stuff out. You don't try and express the things that everybody talks about. You try and express your own experience, your own point of view, and that's the different point of view.
Right.
And so, really, it saved me. Back in Israel and back in Texas, too, like, you know, if it wasn't for art, I would have probably given up completely on myself.
Really?
You know, not just the accent, but because of, I wanted to be in theater and I did these plays in our living room, I kept a part of my identity that was different, you know, that wanted to show my uniqueness. And and that's why I'm still making movies about those kind of things, you
right
know?
Now let me ask you this. Did your parents notice that in you? I mean, did
oh,
you
yeah.
So you expressed to them that you felt you didn't fit in?
Oh in that part, I thought.
Yeah.
In terms of the art?
No. Like your own experience.
I expressed to them,
you
but
know?
You know, there's not much they can do. Like, I also think they didn't fit in too, you know.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
So we were all a family who's not fitting in, and everybody had his own way of coping with it.
Yeah.
But also in terms of the art, they were very supportive. You know, like, you can't put an hour and a half show in your living room if they don't accept it, you know.
Right.
And they helped me get neighbors to come and helped me build the scenery, and they were very supportive. And you see a lot of that in Tree Number 3.
Yeah. So an hour and a half shows you'd put on when you were that young.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
We put on Cats, cool. The musical.
Really?
Yeah. Because there was a DVD of it, like a Broadway DVD. And so I could learn the dance moves and the songs and just copy what they did in the DVD and do it in the living room. So,
And then later on, you started collaborating with people, obviously, because you realized you can't make a movie by yourself.
Totally. You
right.
cannot. Yeah, collaborating is everything in movies. You know, it's
right.
a team movie in the end.
Right.
And that's the great thing about AFI is, you know, there's people come from all over the world and learn different. Each person is in different disciplines. So I was in the directing program, but there's also a screenwriting program, a cinematography, producing, production design, who build the sets.
Wow.
And everybody's an expert in their field. You know, so the production designers that we collaborate with from the production design track are so good at what they do. They're just so good at what they do. And so, you know, it's all about finding people you connect with and making sure we all tell the same story.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So I imagine you found a lot of people to collaborate with in school at AFI. and that took different tracks and, you know, and so forth. But you knew you wanted to direct early on?
Yeah, and I went to AFI for directing.
I see. And but did you ever do any, I mean, you did some acting though, right? Before that?
Before, just when I was a kid. Right. Or in Israel.
I
but
see.
Yeah,
okay.
But no. When I moved to AFI, I was not an actor anymore. But, you know, directing is very close to acting in a way. So all the experiences I had as an actor were super helpful. And, yeah, and I used a lot of the techniques that I used as an actor, you know, as a director. Yeah. And we have some, like, improv classes at AFI, too, which are fun and crazy and, you know, yeah. kind of get you out of your head. Yeah. I always recommend, you know, improv, even if you're not an actor and you just want to like build self-confidence, you should do improv because
really?
you fail and you succeed at the same time. And, yeah. you know, it's such a big part of it is failing, at, you know, making a joke and nobody laughs.
Right. And that's hard in front of people to do.
Oh, yeah. It's super hard.
I know. I see we get many comedians here and stuff and right. we always talk about that and stuff. But yeah, and the reality is a lot of comedians are not really funny, you know. So
yeah.
So that's the sad part of this whole thing. But I understand what you're saying. So the film is called Tree Number Three.
Yes.
And so you're looking at the prejudice also. So it's not prejudice towards immigrant children, but so it's not really only from the. From the accent point of view, but you feel that there were, so it's not only in the child's mind that they're different, but they're treated differently.
Yeah, and that's really for, you know, the story is told from the kid's point of view, just from his experience.
Okay.
Just from, you know, what he's trying to figure out what he can do to get the lead in the school play.
I see.
You know?
Okay. So does he feel this prejudice? Does he even understand what it is at that point?
I don't know if he understands exactly. I just think he feels like he's not accepted for who he is. You know, that he can't, that he has to figure out a way to be somebody else to get the lead role.
Right.
And in the end, he figures out the opposite thing, which is, you know, if he's himself, kind of like be yourself and the audience will find you.
Yeah. So you chose for the lead an Israeli actor, right?
Yes.
A young Israeli actor.
Yes.
What's his name?
His name is Lior Malka. He's actually half French, half Israeli.
Really?
He knows French better. If you watch the movie, you can tell like he has more of a French accent than an Israeli accent.
Yeah.
But his dad is Israeli and his mom is French.
How did you find him?
It was a long process of finding this kid because, we had a casting director, Carla Hull and Natalie, and... it was a long process finding this kid because we needed so many qualities in this one kid. On the one hand, he needed to be very energetic and charismatic and, you know, a performer. But on the other hand, he needed to be very vulnerable and shy and authentic and real. And, you know, it's hard to find that kid. And that he's, you know, knows Hebrew and that he still has an accent. But we found him. We found him in San Diego, actually. And I was so, you know, they sent me a tape. His mom sent me a tape of him doing a monologue from the movie.
Uh-huh.
You know, it wasn't perfect, but the spark, his energy was there. And
really?
It was so rare. And, you know, that's the first compliment we get about the movie when we screen
it. Yeah, it comes across. I saw the trailer.
Yeah.
In fact, do you want to play the trailer real quick? Let me play the trailer. It's not too long. And it does have dialogue, so even in audio, people can relate to it a little bit. So let's play that for a moment, just so you can get an idea.
Yeah, a classic lead. I got almost all the lines in the play.
Wow.
Miss Crystal, last year, you promised that I'd have a speaking role. I was thinking... Now we can show Miss Crystal that we're way more than just background.
But we're supposed to be background. We're trees.
Well, we can be special trees. Trees that dance, sing, talk, without accents. When she sees us, she might even give us some lines.
What exactly do you want us to feel?
No feeling. Just posing.
Miss Crystal, I'm an actor. I can get rid of any accent.
They'll probably laugh at us.
No, they'll love us. Wish me luck.
Very cool.
Thank you. And the music is great too, right?
Yeah, it really is, you know. Yeah. So who did you get for the music?
The music, it's a guy named Claudio Olicia. And Claudio, he worked at Remote Control, which is Hans Zimmer's company, for a few years. He's so talented, you know. He is a violinist himself, so he records a lot of the strings, which I find is a, you know, not a lot of young composers necessarily do that because everything is computer generated.
Right.
But it sounds so different, especially strings when it's computer. You know, piano, you might not tell the difference, but strings, it's so different when it's actually recorded.
Really? When you listen to one next to the other.
Oh, yeah. It's a world difference. He explained it to me because when they do the samples, it's called the computer samples, it's more big orchestras, so it doesn't sound authentic. And, you know, the fact that he was so good at the strings, I was fascinated. And every time there was a note, he wouldn't change it in the computer. He would put up his violin and change it live. And we worked a lot on the music, you know, because at first you use temp music when you edit, you know, you don't use the composed music.
Uh-huh.
And we had a lot of music and B, a lot of great music.
Uh-huh.
It was a composer called John Bryan we used for the temp scores. John Bryan did Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and Synecdoche, New York, and a lot of, you know, Michel Gondry and Charlie Kaufman and Lady Bird. And, you know, when we went to the composing room after we had finished editing, it's hard for the composer to score a film where you already kind of fell in love with the temp tracks. You know, I wanted that. And he was like, well, you're not going to get that. You're going to get something else. You're going to get what I can do. Right. And so it was a process, you know, nailing that music. But he was amazing, yeah.
Yeah. Now, as far as the producing the movie, did you produce it too, or did you find somebody?
A producer at AFI too. They have a producing track, and you know, and every discipline head, every head of, you know, the producer had her own team, and the production designer had her own team. So they all bring their own teams. They don't do it alone, but they're the head of their department.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I see there's, they mentioned producer Iris Yang.
Yes, Iris.
So she produced with you?
Yeah. She was producer of the movie. Yeah.
So she was the producer.
Yeah. They team us at AFI with, you know, we team with a team of AFI collaborators.
Wow. Very cool.
Yeah.
So you made this while you were students still, right?
Yes. We were all students and it was our thesis film.
I see. When was this made?
This was made, you know, about a year ago.
About
a year ago, and it premiered at Palm Springs in June, a few months ago, which was a great festival. It's just short films, so that, you know, in the December they have the features, and in June they have short films, and yeah, it was really well received there. We actually got the Audience Award in Palm Springs.
Very nice.
Yeah. And
so this is what? The audience actually votes?
The audience votes, yeah.
Ah.
Yeah.
So it really touches people, this film.
Yeah, and they're always surprised. You know, they're always surprised because I think it's a comedy and a drama at the same time. And a lot of people cry at the last scene, but they don't expect to. So the thing I always hear is, you know, I even cried. I'm like, I know.
You're supposed to.
That's what happens at the end. But yeah, it's a very emotional movie, and you know, a big part of it is that actor. I think he's very, very vulnerable and just very real. You know, you can see that he's really trying to be this great actor. And another thing I want to say about the movie, you know, what holds the movie together is not the fact that he's being judged for, you know, having an accent. It's his optimism.
Yeah.
Him not giving up, his passion, even when you see the trailer.
Right.
His passion is so magnetic,
right?
You know, and he's always, every scene there, he's convincing somebody something
that,
know,
he can do,
that he can do, that he won't give up, that they can do, that a tree isn't just a tree. He's convincing the two other kids that they can make a big performance out of being trees, and that they can take over. And then when he's disappointed, he convinces them that they could be back. He doesn't stop convincing.
Right. So he actually wants to act, and the teacher tells him, you're just a tree. You're not supposed to act,
basically,
right?
Yeah, basically.
And so he figures out how he can act,
he says,
while being a tree,
what
right?
What kind of tree? What's the problem of the trees? Is the forest okay? What can we do? He's trying to expand the roles of the trees as much as possible.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you had some great American actors too, right?
Yeah.
like, for example, the teacher is the main
role. Yeah, Kelly Ryan, right? Yes.
Kelly Ryan. So how did you get her? I mean, was that also through
casting? Through the casting director, yeah. But yeah, the casting is very, you know, it's just mixed between, you know, Israeli actors that live here, like Rita Zohar, who plays the grandmother, and Kelly Ryan, who plays the teacher, and Ohad Biton, who is an American, American Israeli, and Shira Gross, who's Israeli. Yeah, it's like a mix of, you know, the Israeli family and the American characters, and right, also the other kids who, you know, come from different backgrounds as well.
Right. How many kids did you have in the movie?
Too many.
Too many, right?
It's hard to direct kids. I mean, we had, you know, we had three lead kids, which were the three trees, tree number one, two, and three. And then we had some American kids, and then we had, you know, background kids in the classroom.
Right.
But we had a great first AD. His name was Jason, so the assistant art director who, you know, is in charge of the background actors. And it's a lot of wrangling and making sure, you know, that they appear in the right shots. And a lot of it is, you know, storyboarding everything. Because, you know, with kids, you have limited time on set, and you want to make sure that you know all the shots ahead of time. So we storyboarded, you know, we drew every frame of the movie so that we're really prepared, so that when we show up on set, you know, we know exactly what shot comes after what shot.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, was this the first film you ever made, or did you make anything before that as a student?
I've made a few films. I mean, this was the biggest scale movie. But, you know, like I said, in Israel, when I just moved, I made a movie about a suitcase that gets lost. And then I made a movie in my high school about, actually maybe similar. So like I said, my grandfather is a poet, and he has a song called the Crocodile. How do you translate crocodile?
Crocodile?
Yeah, and it's about how his father always made him these crazy, talking about Halloween, these crazy Purim costumes. They were so crazy. By crazy, I mean, like, you know, from Geves, how do you say Geves?
The cast you have on here.
And he was super sophisticated, but the problem was he couldn't move in the costumes. He couldn't walk when he won the first prize in the Purim contest because they were so heavy and so complicated. And so I made a movie called The Penguin Who Wanted to Be a Kid. And this movie is about this boy who can't tell his father. He's like 14 and he can't tell his father, like, listen, I don't want these crazy costumes anymore. You know, because for his father, it's his ambition. It's his... He waits for this holiday the whole year to make the most impressive costume before the kid. He just wants to be himself. He wants to be himself. You know, he wants to go dancing in the school. But he's stuck in this penguin costume. So that was a movie I did with Ohad Knoller, who's an Israeli actor. Mm-hmm. And I made another movie later on. So I made a few movies, but this was the biggest scale of a movie.
Yeah. Now, as far as the production, does the school give you, do they pay for the resources for the film? I mean,
yeah, do they? It's a mix of, you know, the filmmakers and the school.
Okay, so you also have to raise some funds, right, in order to do this?
Yeah.
And how does that happen? I mean, do you have to personally do that? Or
you do, like, a website, and you push it, and, you know, you ask for family and friends to support you. You make a video, you know, that explains what your movie is about. We actually, in our video, we used some of the footage of me as a kid putting on that Cats musical and saying, like, you want to see more of, you know, this kind of performing. Yeah, and getting creative with, you know, yeah, but really asking family and friends.
Yeah. And how long did the project take you to from beginning to end?
It took such a long time. You know, the big part was the writing. The writing, I knew, you know, like, if you want to make a good movie, spend a lot of time writing it, because those problems are the problems that haunt you. You know, in the editing room, when you're trying to figure out, should I cut here or cut there, you know, usually the problem starts way back in the writing. But, you know, and you write the movie three times, is what people say, in the writing, in the shooting, and in the editing, which is true. Like, you're always retelling your story. But we spent, I think, about 7 months just writing it. And from those 7 months, you know, 2 months, we're just talking about what movies we like. What are our reference movies? You know, for Tree Number Three, it was a lot of Little Miss Sunshine and Ratatouille and Elf and, you know, Legally Blonde. A lot of movies where the character is told that they can't do something because of who they are. So Ratatouille, You're a rat, you know. You're not supposed to cook. You're not a cook. Or what do they tell them? You chef, are what you eat, you know. You are what you eat. You cannot be a chef. Right. Same thing with Little Miss Sunshine or with Legally Blonde or with Elf. You're an elf, you know. Uh-huh. Or you're a human. So, you know, we talked a lot about references. And then we talked about why we want to make the movie. Why it's important to us. Why it's relevant now, but also why it's relevant for us to say it. What do we want to say?
Right.
And there it was just about the passion, the kid's passion, right, that despite his circumstances, he's not going to give up on his dream.
Right. He really wanted it badly enough.
Yes. And, yeah, and you know, and when we send it to people, everybody can connect to, you know, it's kind of like, don't, when people tell you can't do something, you don't have to listen to them, you know. You believe in yourself. And yeah, and we had a great mentor at AFI. His name was Michael Urban. He wrote, you know, he wrote Save, the feature, and a bunch of other movies. And he was very encouraging. You know, he was never like, I don't understand what you're doing. He was just giving always very specific notes every week. They could be big notes, but he would say it as specific as possible. And he was always like, okay, yeah, this line, though. This line, though. This line, though. Circling things that didn't work. And slowly by slow, you know, slowly, slowly, every week, the movie improved and the script improved. And yeah, so I think it was about 7 months of writing. We did so many drafts and, you know, we asked so many people their opinion. Everybody, you know, really, whether it was classmates, teachers, family, friends. Like, I think I'm too obsessed with what people think.
Yeah, right.
You're not going to please everybody. Yeah. But I tried to. I really tried hard that everybody will really like this script, and you can't
well,
do
that's
it.
Your story. I mean, that's pretty much your story since you were a kid.
Yeah.
You know? So, and it continues, you know, because we carry that with the rest, with us for the rest of our lives, you know.
Totally, totally.
So now, did you get a chance to screen this in Israel yet?
Not yet, no. Hopefully, no, huh? I want to do a screening at the Student International Film Festival, which is a great festival, but that's later on. But yeah, we really do an Israeli screening, hopefully soon.
Yeah, people definitely relate to it and stuff.
Yeah.
Now, do you live here now?
Yeah.
You live here now, so you just go back and visit, but this is your home for now.
Yeah.
And
I'm in school.
Yeah. Very, oh, so you're still in school, right?
I just graduated, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How many years did you put in?
It's the school. The program is 2.5 years.
2.5 years.
Yeah.
Wow. Did you go to college too before that?
No, just no, the
so Army. This is what you wanted to do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I don't blame you. You know, why go waste your time with things you don't want to do? You know.
Totally.
Yeah. Now I see the cinematographer. Do we want to give them a little shout out?
Yeah, Zilong Leo. I'm not sure I know how to pronounce his last name. So talented. Again, you know, Zilong. I mean, yeah, the people at AFI, they're all really talented. But Zilong, you know, was on board, you know, like I said about believing, the power of believing, you know, Zilong, before he even knew what the script was about, he said, oh, man, I want to work with you, you know?
Really?
And I was like, oh, wow, yeah. Yeah, like, those are the people you want next to you, you know?
Right.
Like, that believe in you as a filmmaker, too, is really important. Yeah, so he was amazing, and, you know, cinematography-wise, we talked about a lot about the point of view. Like, how do we make it feel like this is Itai's movie, right, you know? So from the first frame of Tree Number 3, it's the kid holding an iPhone camera. It's not in the trailer, but it's the kid holding an iPhone camera, looking in the camera and saying, hello to all my performing fans back home. You too, Grandma. That's what he says, and immediately, you're put in his shoes because he's looking at you, the audience, you know, through his iPhone.
Right.
And you just feel like it's a kid directing the movie.
Yeah.
It's his movie.
Yeah.
And you give him the stage. And that was a big deal in shot listing is, how does the kid feel now? How do we how do we show it? So if he feels, you know, put aside here, how do we show it? How do we show that he feels small? How do we show that he feels empowered or inspired or...
Yeah, I'm anxious to see this now. So
yeah,
if people want to see the short film, I know usually you have to wait for festivals. And
yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
That,
it's right? Still not online, but you should follow our website, which is treenumber3film.com. And in the news section, we post about every upcoming festival. So in LA, we're screening at the AFI Fest on the 16th of November on Saturday. That'd be a great screening. So if you can make it, it's at AFI Fest, and you can go to their website, and you know it says when Tree Number 3 is screening. And we're also screening at the Coronado Film Festival near San Diego next weekend. On the 10th, which the info is on their website, and at the Chicago International Children's Film Festival, if you're in Chicago, this weekend. I'm sure I'm forgetting. There's a few other screenings around, but...
But on the website, you can see that.
Aesthetica, right? In the UK. Yeah, in the website, they're all... all the screenings are posted, and we've really had a great, I'm so happy over the festivals it screened, and the Student Academy Award was super exciting.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure. Wow.
You do a speech, thank you to the Academy, you're saying them again. You can't believe that you're saying it,
Right.
And it was super, super exciting that week.
Yeah, yeah. I can't see why you wouldn't be nominated, at least for being a candidate for an Academy Award, because it's a film that really, I think, can touch people in many different ways.
Thank you. Yeah.
And it talks about the insecurities of children and adults as well. I do believe that we carry most of our stuff from childhood. A lot of baggage and things like that, and we don't really change that much.
Yeah.
We learn how to deal with some things, but I think the insecurities, the doubts, They're always there, at least for me. I mean,
totally.
I'm almost 60 years old. I'm still dealing with things that I did when I was a kid,
Exactly.
So it stays with
exactly.
you.
And that's the bit, as a filmmaker and as the audience, talking about the things that make you feel insecure, I feel like that's why I go to watch movies, is to see somebody like me and say, oh, I recognize that,
Yeah.
Like, I'm not alone. I'm not feeling alone. And I think that's what people connect to the movie, because they say, oh, I'm not alone. There's other people who feel this way. It's always good to talk about, the things you're ashamed of, too, and the things. And, in the same way, what inspires you? What makes you rise above the circumstances? And this kid is so inspiring. And, and like you said, now we're Oscar qualified. So, we're in the long Oscar race, and hopefully wish us luck. Yeah. Hopefully
I don't see why not.
Thank you.
You're right up there. I think with all the great filmmakers and everything, you're just starting your career, So
yeah.
You really have a long way to go.
Thank you.
Do you have any plans of trying to make this into a feature film, or do you want to go?
Yeah, we're trying to develop it as a TV show, actually. So we're now developing it as a TV show, and I'm working on other projects. I'm also developing one of my grandmother's children's book, as well as writing a feature script about the army in Israel. Yeah, so a lot of writing. I'm also doing a TV directing program where you shadow, TV directors, which is something I'm interested in. All sorts of things.
Yeah, very nice.
Yes.
Do you have people that you regularly work with, or that you want to, or is that pretty much something that whatever the project calls for?
Yeah, the project, right? And the scope of it, and who's interested, and there's a lot of different people that I want to work with. So
right, and you made a lot of contacts, I would imagine.
Yeah.
In school.
Yeah, in school and after school, the movie was a great calling card, and
very good. So yeah, that's what I understand from short films. It's usually to get you recognized, to show people what you can do before you have a feature film out there. So it's not like you look for financial success or anything from these.
Yes.
It's more to show what you can do.
Yeah, and to show your voice. Like I told you in the beginning, a lot of the movies are similar themes, So even though they're different stories, I feel like a movie can say a lot about what the filmmaker's voice is, what tone they're interested in pursuing, what kind of movie you're interested in. And I always, there's this exercise where it's like, take the three movies that you love most. This is what I use to find out what the theme of a movie is. But take the three movies you love most, that you would take with you on an island if you could only pick three movies.
Right.
And then go to their climactic scenes, the scene where the character makes a choice. And usually there's a common choice.
Really?
And usually that's your theme,
Right.
Usually, and so in the movies I mentioned, it's usually about, deciding who you want to be.
Right.
Not letting others define who you are. But I mean, you should try it yourself and see what your theme is, because everybody has a theme.
Yeah, I have to think about that. I mean, one of my my favorite films is The Matrix. I don't know what that would be.
Interesting.
How I would relate to that. But I liked it because it deals a lot with philosophy.
Right.
It's not just the special effects, which were amazing anyway. But I think all these possibilities of, you know, what life could be, and, you know, and things like that. So it requires a lot of thinking, and that's what I like in the movie, you know.
Yeah.
But obviously he had to make decisions too, and discover who he was. And even though he didn't want to be, he was reluctantly the, you know, Neo, you know, the leader.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you also, so your family must be proud of you now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they finally see some results of all the years, of all your dreams and everything.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool, right?
Yeah, super exciting.
Is your family here now?
No, they're in Israel.
They're in Israel. So you're here alone now as far as your family
goes.
Yes. I see. Well, very nice. So, we'll be looking for more stuff from you. I mean,
yeah, hopefully you see tree number 3 somewhere around.
Yeah, and so it's not so it's only the festivals you mentioned
for
right?
now. Yeah, and it will be
San Diego.
At some point,
you can see it at the AFI here in LA.
Yes.
And now, where do they screen those at AFI?
So AFI Festival is actually in the Chinese theaters.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not actually related to the AFI Conservatory, my school. Have their own festival. They have great movies there, like I recommend. And
really?
I think you don't need to purchase tickets. You just need to get a pass online. And it's a great festival. If you have like a weekend, you should definitely go. There's some great movies there.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm looking forward to it. And Omer Ben Shaker, thank you so much for joining
us. Thanks so much for having me. It was
of
really
course,
fun.
You're very inspiring. And I want to commend you for being able to overcome a lot of obstacles and difficulties, and being able to make something that you really believe in and that you love and everything. And you've got a great publicist in Catherine, and she'll make it happen for you. You know,
thank you.
She has a lot of clients who end up in the Academy Awards. So you're in good company there.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.